So we're going to be looking at this paper by a group of researchers from the University of South Carolina. They published this article in 2008, and the title of the article is on comparison of the health aspects of swimming with other types of physical activity and sedentary lifestyle habits. What they set out to achieve was to evaluate whether regular swimming is comparable to other aerobic activities in terms of beneficial health outcomes. It's quite an important paper in the sense that it's looking at exercise and the effect on health outcome, and in particular looking at swimming and whether it has any advantages over other forms of aerobic exercise on health.
So what we've picked up is an extract from the introduction of this paper, and what we were trying to do is to be as discursive as possible. Our aim is to unpack the article, which is available for you to read the full piece if you're interested in. We've given you links to that. But we'll start off by looking at the introductory piece, which is the extract that we've included in this short exercise. And I found it quite interesting in terms of the introduction where, and I quote, it says, swimming, water jogging, and aqua aerobics are excellent aerobic activities that might provide health benefits to the general population, as well as patients with chronic disease such as heart failure. So as soon as I saw this statement, I thought, wow, that is a really, really, really broad statement to make. So I need to unpack this. The first thing that came to me was to do a follow-up in terms of find out what this Schmidt et al. 2007 paper talks about, and because they're using it as a way of substantiating this huge claim that they're making with regards to swimming, water jogging, and aqua aerobics being excellent activities. So I did a bit of digging out to find out what this paper actually looked at. And quite fascinating for me was that Schmidt's paper doesn't actually make any form of association of swimming with any of these diseases. Schmidt et al.'s paper was actually looking at issues around heart failure. So for me, that judgment, the judgment call here, is that I would have expected a range of papers or a range of studies to have been cited in order to actually substantiate this huge claim that is being made. And that's one of the things that I'll be looking out for in any critical evaluation of any academic paper that I'm sort of looking at.
The paper that you're referring to is included in the reference list. The paper itself is open access, so you should be able to access it via the link that we've given you, and you can look at the actual contents of the paper yourself. The Schmidt paper, when I was looking at this, I thought it would be a review. You know, it covers all the chronic diseases and heart failure and everything else, and it shows some indication that swimming, water jogging, aqua aerobics are excellent aerobic activities. But Schmidt et al. Only looked at heart failure, and I suppose that's where it qualifies it. Mm. So for me, that was a bit of a generalization from the authors, you know, exactly as you said. The second point, if you carry on reading the second sentence, is talking about aquatic exercises might be preferred over other forms of aerobic activity for people who have arthritis, diabetes, disabilities. It doesn't really generalize what disabilities those are. Mm-hmm. Or excess weight. So in a similar way, we looked at the Lynn, Davey and Cochrane, and what do they show?
Well, I mean, again, it's one that, even before I go into that, as soon as I saw disabilities, I'm thinking, what type of disabilities? I mean, this is a huge spectrum, and citing just one paper, I mean, before I even went to look out for what that paper said, I just wondered what type of study would have actually covered this spectrum to make this sort of association.
Lynn, Davey and Cochrane were looking at osteoarthritis. Older adults with osteoarthritis of the lower limb, and it's a clinical trial. So it wasn't certainly, you know, as broad as made out here.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because there weren't many studies. There are good aspects to this as well, because we find out that this study is a longitudinal study, and it compares the health habits and characteristics of swimmers, runners, walkers and sedentary women and men. Overall, that's a pretty good thing. So going to the discussion, we know their outcome, what they set out to do. Their discussion starts off with a sentence: the principal findings of this report are that all types of physical activity have similar health benefits compared with a sedentary lifestyle. Is that surprising?
No, not surprising at all. So then I go back to myself again, say, okay, so let's look at the research questions and probably what may have been the motivation for this research in the first place. That drove me to say, okay, let me look at what the conclusions are, because very often that gives you an idea of where these authors probably may be leading to. Interestingly, it says, our results show that Swimming appears to have health benefits similar to those of running and generally was more beneficial than walking or sedentary lifestyle. But we've just said that. They said, can you read that again for us?
The principal findings of this report are that all types of physical activity have similar health benefits compared with a sedentary lifestyle.
But they've changed this slightly now. So I begin to ask myself, is there a motivation for this paper? Because now they're saying that it may have more benefits than walking.
All right, so our results show, this is in the conclusions,
yes,
that swimming appears to have health benefits similar to those of running and generally was more beneficial than walking or a sedentary lifestyle. Okay. And then they also say in the conclusion, I just read the first sentence, that swimming might provide a healthful alternative to traditional modes of exercise. What do you consider to be a traditional mode of exercise? Is swimming not a traditional mode of exercise?
Well, probably maybe it depends on your socioeconomic status, because I agree. I mean, I don't know what would be classified as a traditional mode of exercise and what wouldn't. Probably maybe golf isn't a traditional mode of exercise.
Well, I don't think they looked at golf in this study. They didn't look at golf.
So
they're looking at running, walking
yeah,
and swimming. Yeah. So I'm getting a little bit confused here. In the preceding to the conclusion, they talk about the principal strength of this study, which I agree, is the large population that we observed and the extensive data set running over more than 30 years. That's a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
Looking at the funding for this study, I saw it's the National Swimming Pool Foundation and the National Institutes of Health, and they've got health grants to do it. Okay, maybe the reason why there aren't so many studies in this area are because it's difficult to get funding.
Mm.
Or, on the other hand, maybe the fact that they are getting funded has had some sort of impact or influence on the way they are presenting their papers. So could that have been something that...
That could have been an issue. And that is one of the reasons why it's very, very important that we look at issues of generalizability. So I'd often go back and look at some of the findings and whether the methodology or the sample that has been selected, that's kind of passed the test of generalizability. And interestingly, the authors in the last paragraph of their discussion have made it clear, and they do recognize that. And that is another very important facet of academic studies or primary studies, that we have to make sure that we clearly identify any constraints that there may be with regards to the study. And in the last part, one sentence, it makes it clear that results must be generalized with caution because the population includes few members of minority groups and comes from relatively high socioeconomic strata. But a concern of mine is the sentence doesn't read well to me, because I'd rather want to see that the results are not generalizable, mainly because of where it's been drawn from. So again, it's the writing style that has probably got me here, because there's got limited generalizability because of the sample and for some of the reasons that they've identified. Even the reason they've identified, I'm sure that a lot of people will have something to say about that, because it's not just about people's socioeconomic status.
It's certainly not the only aspect to look at. I'm still concerned, I'm still held up with what is deemed a traditional form of exercise and what isn't. This was a study done about 8 years ago now, and time has passed.
Yeah.
What have the authors done subsequently in terms of research, and where has this particular research been followed up? Has anyone else done anything in this area?
It's quite interesting you're raising that point, because again, as I grappled with trying to get my head around the way the evidence is being interpreted, I said to myself, okay, probably maybe we should find out whether further studies have been done, because in typical academic fashion, if you look at the last sentence of the conclusions, it says future prospective research is needed to further compare the health benefits of swimming with those of other forms of activity. So I said, okay, I know that's what you set out to find out in the first place, but maybe you weren't able to do it this first time around. So probably maybe there'll be future studies or further studies by this same group, looking at the amount of data they've got, if work has been done in this area. Interestingly, another paper popped up from these same authors in the same journal in the next issue to the one that this paper was published in. And that paper is titled Swimming and All-Cause Mortality Risk Compared with Running, Walking, and Sedentary Habits in Men. But what struck me in that paper was part of the introduction where they cite the first paper. And the difficulty I have is that in this second paper, they're making claims that they were not able to substantiate in the first paper. It reads, and I quote, swimming, water jogging, and aqua aerobics are lifetime physical activities for many people. We have previously shown that swimming provides health benefits comparable to those from walking and running. In the first paper, they were not able to establish this. So I found it surprising that they're now making this sort of claim. And the only source of evidence is the paper that was published in the previous issue. So I'm still not sure what their initial research question is and whether they've attempted to answer the research question and where that takes us, really.
What stands out for me is their conclusion from their previous paper, which says that our results show that swimming appears to have health benefits similar to those of running and generally was more beneficial than walking or a sedentary lifestyle. Mm. So without a really closer examination of what they've actually shown in terms of data that they have provided, it's at the moment quite a moot point whether swimming has any advantages, but all exercise is beneficial over a sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah.
So there's some inconsistency or difficulties in the way that the results are being presented. So it requires a deeper analysis. One way of looking at this in terms of who has published since or what work has been done, because it's clearly an under-researched area, is to look at the citations, how many times other authors have cited these papers. And you can do this on Google Scholar. So if you type in the keywords or the title of the papers or the authors, it comes up with these two articles. See that their papers have been cited 12 times and 17 times, which is not a lot, but more importantly, you need to investigate where and who has cited these papers. And interestingly, one of these turns out to be a systematic review published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine that looked at quite a lot of studies. They looked at 26 different sport disciplines and all published work, and this is a recent review published in 2015, which included the one paper that we're talking about. And what they concluded was that evidence for health benefits of sport disciplines other than football and running was either inconclusive or tenuous. They go on to say that the evidence for health benefits of specific sports disciplines other than football and running is generally compromised by weak study design and quality. They don't say limited information. They're talking very specifically here about weak study design and quality. And that, for me, would trigger me to go back and look at the study design and investigate in more depth the data and analysis that was presented by Nancy and colleagues.
Yeah, that's true for this paper. The second paper, interestingly, was cited in a white paper. These are usually commissioned by government authorities in terms of trying to establish policy, really. And this paper was selected as one of the papers that was sort of considered. And the white paper was mainly around physical inactivity and obesity. So very often you find out that, yes, these policymakers will draw on some of these papers. I mean, we were not part of the team that selected the papers for the white paper. But it's obvious from my own little bit of research that I've done since we started to look at this paper. There's limited work in this area. So it's quite scanty, and we will always commend colleagues who've done this work for bringing it to the forefront of research. So that's one of the good things that you get from primary studies, because very often policymakers have to rely on empirical work conducted in universities and research institutes to formulate their own ideas.
So it's understandable if there's not enough information out there. But given that 8 years have passed and a more extensive study is saying it's inconclusive, where do we go from here? Two other papers that cited this follow-up had interesting headlines.
Okay.
One of them was Swimming in the USA, Beachgoer Characteristics and Health Outcomes at US Marine and Freshwater Beaches.
Okay.
And I couldn't really immediately find the association between beachgoers and aerobic exercise in a swimming pool. But the second one, the title really struck me, was Can Polish University Female Students Swim? And I'm not sure how relevant that is to the actual article that I've just read.
Yeah, it's very important that you've raised this issue of relevance, because that's what we often advise students to think about. And it goes back to even the Schmidt et al. Paper we talked about earlier on. How relevant is that study to the argument or the case that they were trying to build? And it's very, very important that you get a grasp of that. Don't just go by strap lines or headlines or titles of papers. It's very, very important that you actually pick the paper. First of all, at least look at the methodology. Make sure that it's in line with what you're studying, or it sheds a new light in terms of what you're actually investigating. you also want to look at the findings. And probably maybe in this particular case, we've not fully interrogated the research design, but at least you want to look at the findings and the discussion, because that is where you're able to form an opinion, and that's where your independent thoughts come in. You have to start applying your own independent understanding to what the authors or what the researchers have found out. And then finally, look at the conclusions they're drawing from the findings. And that is where you'll be able to pick up what is relevant to your study or your assignment and what's not relevant. You can't just go for strap lines. And I think this is a classic example that anybody will struggle to find the sort of relevance to this piece of work.
Yes, I'm not even going to answer that question. Can Polish University female students swim? Anyone who wants to have a look at that paper are welcome to go and look at that. But I wouldn't recommend it at this time. So we've covered how to go about the process, how to evaluate a particular piece of information, how to dig deeper, go behind that to the primary sources, because that's essential. There's nothing wrong with reading reviews, but it's really important to go to the primary sources so you can come to your own decision about a particular point of view. As you said, not just pick up the headline and use this and refer, cross-refer to a source. So what are assessors going to look for in you demonstrating your evidence of critical thinking in the way you communicate? Well, communicating and writing, because a lot of assignments that you do at master's level are written assignments. This can be an essay, a critical review, or it can be your extended project or dissertation as part of your master's. Evidence that assessors are going to be looking for is the depth of evaluation, how widely you have read around a particular subject, how much, exactly as we've been doing, you've probed into the topic area and looked at different perspectives, not just gone with one popular or a particular opinion article, but looked at different perspectives. What about other points?
Most programs also look out for your ability to communicate your ideas effectively. So structure, cogency, all these things come into play. Language is one of the key things that will come up every now and then, and we do know that students do fall short of that in terms of academic English or academic writing, and that's one of the things that we've tried to look at and help you in earlier sessions of this course. Another thing that most assessors will be trying to look at, especially with degrees where they probably may be described as an applied degree, is your ability to transfer the ideas that have been introduced or you've been introduced to in the course to your own professional setting or personal experience. And that is where your critical reflection comes in and your reflective practice ideas coming. And I think we've taken you through these in earlier sessions. But what is very, very important is for you to be able to translate the theoretical ideas that you are coming across. And one of the ways to do that, or one of the approaches that can help you, is mind maps, which we've introduced you to. So as you read through these papers, you have to start picking out the key ideas that are influencing your understanding and the key ideas that are influencing your practice. Start mapping them together and then begin to see how they actually play out in the real world of work, which is your experience professionally or beyond your professional context. And in your writing, you should be able to demonstrate how these ideas have influenced or changed your thinking or changed your practice. And that is one of the things that most assessors will be looking out for.
Just coming back to the depth of knowledge, I think it's important to highlight not only the fact that you have a good understanding of the subject, you've gone through the research and picked up all the papers and sorted through them, made sure that the relevant information is included in your work, but also that you identify gaps in where there are gaps in the knowledge, because that shows your independent inquiry, which was what I was going to discuss next, really. What does originality and insight mean? Because in a lot of assignments, you know, that's one of the assessment points. How do you evaluate insight or originality in a piece of work?
Well, I mean, most assessors will look for originality in the sense that they want students to be able to apply their own thinking to some of the issues that are raised in journal publications or pieces of work that they probably engage with or read. One of the things you'd want to do is to be able to go beyond what you read. So how you demonstrate insight is your ability to select pieces of work that directly related to your piece of work and taking it the next step, demonstrating that you're actually going beyond what most will do.
So we're not born with insight then. You have to go and look for it. You have to gain insight.
Yes.
You've done all the work. You've been critical. You've got the relevant sources, but you need to communicate it in a way that demonstrates your critical thinking. Originality, or better way of saying it, independent thought, your thoughts and your ability to make an informed judgment based on the sources that you've got hold of and you're presenting. And of course, then comes the presentation, how you put it across. The critical analysis comes out through how you communicate. So the person who doesn't know you and has never met you can find out from the way you've presented or communicated how exactly you've gone about engaging with the literature and putting this into a framework that you present to show evidence of critical thinking, evaluating, supporting your claims or your argument very clearly. And you show insight in the way that you can identify gaps that you think haven't been addressed. As we talked about here, there are a few studies on swimming, but there have been some other studies. Well, maybe we can follow those up.
And that's, in a nutshell, is what you'll be required. And most assessment criteria for your assignments will cover all the issues that we've raised.
We hope that's given you a picture on how to go about not only developing critical and analytical thinking, but applying it when you come to look at various sources of information.
One of the key things that you have to be able to pick up from our discussion is that it's a process. It takes time. We don't expect you to understand all this overnight. It's very, very important to tap into communities, tap into academic communities, tap into professional communities, where you get the opportunity to discuss some of these publications, where you get the opportunity to rehearse your arguments, and in online programs like ours, forums that are always open for you to be able to engage with academics and not be afraid to debate. Again, as we've said, critical thinking or critical evaluation is not about just disagreeing. It's mainly about using evidence, things that you've read, to formulate arguments that you actually put forward for others to also critique.
Absolutely. I mean, other students can have different perspectives, just like we are talking about this. We actually agreed on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, but we don't always agree.
I don't know about that. but I think something we can agree on is exercise. Exercise is good and you should do it. And it's good for health. So get out there and do whatever you prefer to do best. They're all equally important.
They are equally important. That's the key message. The benefits are mutual.